the CHGO White Sox postgame show, coming to you live from Studio A of our CHGO offices here in the West Loop of Chicago. I'm your host, Sean Anderson, alongside me, the full CHGO White Sox crew. That's Vinny Duber, our CHGO White Sox beat writer. You can follow him at Vinny Duber. The man in the middle is Herb Lawrence. You can follow him at Eckernwall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. You can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. And we are being produced today by Greg Braggs Jr. You want to say hi?
Hi.
What'd you do on
Friday? You'd know that it's me producing because I messed up the start.
There you go. What'd you do on Friday?
I went to our great Friday 120 club and had fun in the bleachers.
Make any stupid signs out there?
On Thursday night, there might have been some arts and crafts done at the Braggs residence that Cody caught a lot of strays for.
Glitter? Did you use some glitter on the sign, Greg?
No glitter.
Okay.
No
Maybe
glitter.
You should have used glitter.
But I
Maybe
colored
the more glitter.
In between the lines.
The less hate.
Magic markers?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Nice. You can follow us at CHGO_White Sox. Thank you to Ron for sending in the Super Chat. $2 Super Chat to start us off with year two of five of Andrew Benintendi. And Benintendi will be one of our topics today. Braden Shoemake will be one of our topics today. The White Sox not being able to get a hit in the first two games will be a topic today. And then we'll discuss the four-game series that is coming up in Minnesota. Sox lose 8-2. They get swept for the fourth time this year. They played seven series. They've been swept in four of them. Is that good? Vinny Duber, answer.
Swept more often than not. That's not great.
Okay. All right. Well, hit the thumbs up. We appreciate you joining us for this not great team. Hit the subscribe button as well. It's a big week in Chicago sports. Caleb Williams will likely be the number one overall pick in the 2024 NFL draft. Hey, there's something
go.
We can agree about.
It's our last Sunday without Caleb Williams as a Chicago Bear.
That sounds pretty 20 good.
20 more Sundays until Caleb Williams runs out the tunnel as the quarterback of the Chicago Bears.
So you White Sox fans.
Uh-oh, guys, Braggs forgot what show he's on right now.
No, this is good. This is good because hopefully, you know, there are a lot of White Sox fans that are Bears fans, I'd assume, right?
Yes.
Herb, you're a Bears fan.
Yes.
Okay, all right.
It's been tough.
Vinny, you're a Bears fan?
Yeah, I guess by technicality,
yeah, you know,
sure.
You enjoy football and, you know, you'll watch who's on. Yeah, okay, all right, whatever. But hey, you know, there's something to look forward to. Maybe it's not White Sox baseball. All right, let's start off with this game because this game was funny. Sox lose 8-2. They did have a lead. There was the top of the first inning where the Phillies weren't allowed to bat yet, and Eloy Jimenez hit a two-run homer, and that was very cool. Home run high in the zone. He took it very far and knew it off the bat, and we're like, hey, Eloy Jimenez is back. And then he didn't get a hit for the rest of the game. Most of the White Sox didn't get a hit
None
for the rest
of them
of the
did.
Game.
All but two.
Two others, yeah.
I think there was like four after the first inning.
There were two.
Oh, two.
The first inning.
Literally two. Yeah.
Perfect. and then the Phillies got to bat, and the White Sox had to play defense, and none of that went well. Did it?
No, it's really bad. Like, we understand that this team doesn't have the horses offensively to play the game correctly and to win games. But in the absence of that, you could still play the game correctly, do the fundamental things correctly. And there were so many things today that the White Sox did incorrectly fundamentally, like not holding runners on. They had four stolen bases and getting a rundown. Instead of, you know, just allowing that run to score, which is Trey Turner, he's got the 99th percentile speed in Major League Baseball, just tag Bryce Harper and get the second out. He got neither of the two. Andrew Benintendi, we're going to get into an absolute horrendous game. And you just can't quantify how bad this team is. Like, the record speaks for itself, but I think they're worse than even the record says of 3-18 now. They played just probably their worst game today, even though they got two runs. If that's hard to believe.
This was the worst game of the series?
Yes, yes.
Oh, I disagree.
Yes. Those other pitchers were pitching well. Turnbull was pitching well, and Wheeler was pitching. Oh, man, that guy is good. We should have tried to get him. I know they tried. But they were actually pitching well. And Nola pitched well after the first inning, but there was no real discernible, like, oh, that's a gaffe that the White Sox shouldn't do in Friday or Saturday. I'm not remembering right now. Today, it might be just top of mind, prisoner of the moment type of thing. They just played horribly today and got beat like they should have.
And Herb, the way you phrased that, you know, when you started talking about that kind of jumped out at me because you said, you know, maybe you're not going to hit,
yeah,
you know, but you can at least play the game the right way. Guess what, though? they didn't set that up to be the consolation.
No.
They set out to be exactly what they were going to do this year. Yeah. It was, hey, maybe this offense doesn't stack up against some of the other best ones in the league. Maybe that wasn't the focus of the offseason work. But, boy, you fans out there, you folks watching the game, just you wait, because it's going to be so clean. It's going to be so exciting. Every other facet of the game is going to be something that this team was going to be able to hang their hat on. Defensive improvement, running the bases without making mistakes, not making these plays that were the hallmark, unfortunately for them, of the previous two seasons that led to, you know, a brand new rebuilding effort beginning on the south side. This is the opposite of what we were expecting from this team, or at least this team was expecting from itself. To go out and have a game like today in which we can tally, spend the next hour tallying up the physical mistakes, the mental mistakes, and then on top of it, the fact that they don't hit very much. You know, that is a problem. You know, Sean, you asked, we were all asked at the beginning of the season, what's going to be the worst case scenario for this team? And, you know, I like to talk not necessarily in win losses, but in more bigger picture terms. And I said the worst case scenario is they don't make any progress in the areas that they claimed they were going to make so much progress in. So far, they have not made much progress. Maybe they've made a little bit here and there. There have been games where the defense has not been an issue. There have been games, but like, me even saying that, like, oh, well, at least they've had some games where they didn't make a bunch of mistakes. Like, that should explain right there, that phrasing, that they have not come close to meeting their own goals for this season, which were not, I mean, they were higher than the outside world's expectations for them, but, like, whew, they have, this has been bad, and you don't even have to look at the record to know how bad it's been.
It's extremely painful, embarrassing and humiliating, and I understand that even Herb on the, over the weekend is calling for accountability, and other people are calling for accountability, and I understand this is some of the worst baseball I think we've ever seen on the South Side. Yes. Why are you smiling? What's going on?
My guy, I went on the Phillies, BHLY Philly shirt show probably in February or March, and I told Tyler, who was one of the producers, and Renee, that they were going to be bad this year. Like, the worst, because they brought up how the White Sox fans drink the most and have the most alcohol beverages per game. I was like, guys, there's reasons. This team is bad. And Tyler's like, I don't think they believed. After the end of the thing, after the end of the show, they're like, oh, my God, hashtag free Herb. This is a bad, bad team. And now I think they've seen it in person. They're like, oh, yeah, Herb wasn't exaggerating how bad the White Sox were. I think I was selling them short when I went on, because I was at least thinking that, as we said, Vinny, that they would play right. They didn't play right this whole series, and today was the culmination of a bad, bad series. And they got four to go with Minnesota. If they're keeping the same pattern, they're going to lose those four, too.
13 games, they've allowed at least a stolen base. They've allowed multiple stolen bases in four games, and they've allowed four stolen bases or more in two games as well. They had six stolen bases allowed against Cincinnati, and then today, in the first four innings, they had four stolen bags. And I think it's probably worth it to talk about how that lead quickly evaporated for the White Sox. Bryce Harper was on first base. Well, Trey Turner was on third base.
Don't let Nick Mastrini off the hook. He walked two batters that he faced today.
Right. The reason why those runners were on was because Nick Mastrini, first batter to Kyle Schwarber on four pitches, walked a batter. And it was just messy, allowing base runners. But starting with Harper on first, Trey Turner on third. Why, that name doesn't sound right.
Trey Turner.
Oh,
it's been his name the whole time he's been a baseball player.
Is that real?
Sure.
Yeah. Also, I think it's the T-R-A-E. Like, it's just, that's not a name. It's just a bunch
T-R-E-A.
Of...
T-R-E-A.
Still not a name. Yeah. Anyways, Harper starts to steal second because they strike out Real Muto. Maldonado throws down to second base. Lenin Sosa races Bryce Harper back to first base. Harper safe at first base. And while Lenin Sosa is probably about, 75 feet to first base, realizes that Trey Turner is running home, and while his weight is taking him towards first base, he tries to throw it very off-balanced towards Maldonado. It is away from Maldonado, near the third base dugout, gets away from Maldonado. Turner steals home, official scorebook ruling, and then Harper's able to advance to second, and it's just a real encapsulation of fast and them not being able to be, you know, technically sound. Like, they're not going out there and they're not playing clean baseball. And it seemed, at least for the first games when they were going up against Detroit, it was like, oh, they're all one-run games and they're close. And if they just get a little bit more offense, maybe they'll be able to win some. But when you're losing 8-2, 9-5, and for eight innings you're getting no hit, and then today 8-2, it's like, well, there's no reason. Like, even if you're playing as technically sound as possible, maybe it's 6-2, but like, it's still not good enough. Like, they're just horrendous, and they need to be perfect to not get their ass beat.
I mean, on that play, literally, they throw the ball down, and I think, Vinny, you yelled out, like, just tag him. Just get the out and get the out at second. And let that run scored. Tie game 2-2. God bless. At least you get an out. They executed a thing. And it's Trey Turner, too. Let's not forget about, like, him with that blazing speed. If you thought that you wouldn't try to get him out, you have to get him out when he breaks, like from third base to home. By the time that Lenning threw that ball anyways, Trey Turner's at home. Like, he's got blazing speed. So you get nobody out. And just what's going through your mind right there? Why are you trying to throw home in a game that's in the first inning? That's not like the winning run to score. That's just a game tying run. They're giving you an out right there with Bryce Harper. Tag him and get the out. And it was just dumb play. I don't understand what he was thinking. And he had not a worse game than Andrew Benintendi, but he had a pretty bad game for himself. Lenny Sosa did.
And I don't think there was a single caught stealing. So that is now 13 stolen bases for Martin Maldonado allowed, one caught stealing, and we did bring up Corey Lee. Corey Lee's numbers are better. It's not 13 stolen bases and one caught stealing. It's 10 stolen bases and one caught stealing. So there you go, Corey Lee. For the people saying that, you know, Corey Lee should be behind the plate, he should be, but Corey Lee needs a day off.
Yeah,
and Corey Lee's the savior in yesterday's game, and he gets a hit in the eighth inning. So, I mean, we can't do it all for this team.
I mean, those of us who've been watching this for several years in a row, this is very obviously a White Sox problem now. I mean, I think we heard it explained either the last year or the year before by Yasmani Grandal at one point when we were asking him relatively early in the season, maybe even, you know, middle of the year, but first half certainly, you know, hey, what's with all the stolen bases you guys are giving up kind of thing? And he gave a very long answer that was like, you know, it did sound kind of defensive for a catcher, but like bringing up that, like, hey, this is not all just who's catching. The pitcher plays a role in this, and that is true. And so now that we've seen the entire catching core turned over from one year to the next and the entire starting rotation turned over from one year to the next, and they still are having trouble with the stolen base and allowing so many of them, you have to think that this is just a team issue, or at least they've gotten multiple collections of pitchers and multiple collections of catchers who are having similar problems, because to allow these teams that have no shyness about running all over the place to just be safe every time, like the jumps that these guys are getting, it obviously is negatively affecting the White Sox now, not just now with the current group they have, but over multiple years.
And like I said,
because Corey Lee has a great arm.
Oh yeah.
And so to say, oh, it's just because Maldonado's back there. No, you read off the stats for Corey Lee. They're stealing on Corey Lee too. It's obviously not just down to how good those guys' arms are.
And the thing is too, I said during the game, if you're Greg Maddux, you can allow stolen bases because you know you're going to get the next guy out. And if that's the pitcher's mentality, I don't like it, but it's fine. I like the confidence you have. But the truth of the matter is the White Sox pitchers are not getting those guys out. And singles are eventually scoring those runs that go to second base. Or in that case, you get a stolen base of home.
Sorry to cut you off, but yeah. I also heard that the White Sox pitchers, or at least the White Sox, don't have Greg Maddux himself either.
No.
Okay. That might be an issue.
Yeah, it's tough. They should go and get him. I think whatever age Greg Maddux now would probably do well in the White Sox rotation.
But it's, you know, even then we heard, you know, Mike Soroka trying not to be perfect and put all this pressure on them. And it just seems like everyone's trying to make it happen and no one's good enough.
I mean, literally today's batting order had everybody, sans Gavin Sheets, had a sub 200 average. So are they all trying too hard or are they all just bad? Like, they could just all be bad.
All be bad.
Even though I think that some of them are trying too hard, and your guy Andrew Benintendi is trying too hard, and the guy who got a rest today, Andrew Vaughn, is trying way too hard because he's not an under 200 hitter in his career. We know that. We know he's much better than he's shown this year.
We'll talk about try-hard Benintendi in a second. We will talk about Braden Shoemaker's goatee as well. We'll talk a little bit about Garrett Crochet, who started on Friday, and I might even bring up Jerry Reinsdorf for a second. All right, don't worry.
Well, we've had 2 days off, so yeah, I guess.
Come on, I've had some thoughts. Yeah. But I want you guys to know about Illinois pork producers. Mm-hmm. Why not go and support your own state? Elevate your protein game with Lean Pork, a powerhouse of natural goodness. You could savor the flavor, savor the gains, and celebrate any occasion by enjoying the best pork produced by Illinois pig farmers. People who are active need more protein than the average American, and in fact, the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, the Dietitians of Canada, and American College of Sports Medicine recommend 1.2 to 2 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight per day for athletes, depending on training. For a 150-pound person, I think that's Greg Braggs, maybe.
He's there. Bigger. Man, skinny.
What did I do?
Never mind.
He's probably 202.
That's about how big are you?
Oh, I'm working on it, but I'm 230.
I know you're working on it. All right, yeah. 230.
I was
all right.
280 Lean. Last April for the draft party. This Lean. Year, I'm 230.
Because you're eating more
Let's
pork.
Let's go. Caleb Williams and Braggs, we're working here.
And you're eating pork, and you're probably eating around 136 grams of protein per day.
You got to have your protein, got to have your fats, got to have your carbs.
And that's
all good for you in moderation.
And that's what pork is. From your sausage and bacon for breakfast to pulled pork or juicy chops hot off the grill, it's an entire season dedicated to pork and the people behind the product. It's paid for by Illinois pork producers, generations of commitment. Herb?
Let me tell you about the folks at Prize Picks.
Why don't you?
It is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America, where the easiest and most exciting way to play DFS. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling against thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. Spring training is over and baseball season is officially underway. Don't miss your chance to add your favorite players from the diamond to your prize pick entries. Whether it's strikeouts, RBIs, first inning runs, take your pick at more or less and add them to your prize pick entry today. Get in on the playoff action and win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks as you get the world's best players take on the new level during basketball's postseason, which started yesterday, and the games are on fire. And unfortunately for me, there's no more Ayo Dosunmu because that was my favorite bet, betting Ayo Dosunmu points, rebounds, and assists versus Trae Young's points, rebounds, assists less than on Trae Young, more than on Ayo Dosunmu, and I'll be cashing in every time. They played last week, and then the Bulls went to Miami and then laid an egg. So there's no more Ayo Dosunmu bets for me, but you can bet on the NBA playoffs and MLB action all you want to on PrizePicks. Just go to prizepicks.com/CHGO and use the code CHGO for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/CHGO and use the code CHGO. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Can I pick more or less than on teams to lay a goose egg? Is that a prop?
I don't know. But, I mean, if they had a prize pick prop where they said, will the White Sox get more than or less than 0.5 hits, I would go less than on most of those games.
Craig Goldstein celebrating the Phil Umber anniversary today said the White Sox to celebrate Phil Umber's anniversary are trotting out a lineup that can get perfect aimed every single day. So, you know, that congratulations to Craig for that one. All right, let's talk about one of those players that really doesn't get on base, doesn't play the field well, isn't really that fast,
nope.
But gets paid a ton of money. Andrew Benintendi. I wrote very cleanly in my notes here, Benintendi sucks. So why don't we dive into that a little bit? I have wrote, dropped a foul ball, and then a ball bounces past him, a ball that he probably could have made a play on, a fly ball, let it drop in front of him, then he runs past it, so then he has to go back and try to pick up the ball. And then on two separate occasions, he throws home instead of throwing to a cutoff person, and a runner's to it on the first throw in the fourth inning, the runner's allowed to advance to third base. In the seventh inning, the runners are allowed to run to second base. So what do we make of Andrew Benintendi and his play in the outfield?
Well, I'll say this. I think, you know, Herbie brought it up, and, like, certainly when you've got Pedro and the players talking about, you know, guys pressing and trying to do too much. Obviously, fans don't want to hear it because it's just, they're just losing and they don't like that. But if you want an example of somebody who's trying to do too much, Andrew Benintendi today was it. Both of those throws on which he, you know, just ignored the cutoff man and threw home were him trying to get five outs with one throw or try to, you know, turn the score back by throwing a guy out at home plate twice. I mean, I think what one of them was in the seventh inning or something. Yeah. They were losing by
8-2,
losing by six runs. Like to do that and give an extra base in at the same time is just trying to do way, way, way too much. It's obvious when he drops that bunt down that went so awry that he popped up and gets thrown out on a popped up bunt behind the pitcher's mound. Like, why was the third baseman even in position to make that play? It's a freak play, but it shows you this is a guy who's brought in here because he's supposed to know how to do those things well, right? He's supposed to be able. We've been hearing this since the day he was introduced. Mm-hmm. Pedro telling me that, oh, this is a guy who does it all. You can trust him to put down a bunt, that kind of thing. And here he is screwing up the bunt because he's trying to put down the greatest bunt in the history of bunts that will get six runners into scoring position at the same time. You just can't do that. I'm not trying to bag on the guy or make fun of him. It's just that's the mindset that some of these guys can't help but having when they go out there to try to make plays. And then it snowballs, and you get a play that somebody like him should never make, dropping that fly ball in foul territory down the left field line or overrunning the ball. And you can see it all over the field. I mean, Benintendi had a bad game today. Benintendi's had a bad 21 games so far, but you can see it all over the field. You just got these things that are happening. Robbie Grossman almost slipping on the warning track, picking up a ball in right center. You know, it's all over the place. And when you've got these guys trying to hit 10 run homers with one swing, it's not conducive to getting out of it, right? Nope. It makes it worse. Mm-hmm. And you saw today very clear example of it going worse for Benintendi, a guy who can't seem to do anything right now, trying to do something right, and it makes nothing go right. You know what I mean? It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy almost, and it really is a microcosm, not just of what's happening with his season, but what is happening with the whole team so far this season.
I don't know if he has a day off. Like today, Andrew Vaughn got the day off, first time through the year that he got a day off, much needed because he's in his own head. He's not the player that has shown up for the 20 games previous to today. Andrew Benintendi, he is in his head, and as Vinny just stated the case for, but also he's just declined since he's come to the White Sox. I don't know what's wrong. Last year, he had the excuse of having off-season surgery, his hand not being as well as he thought it was. And so, you know, after hindsight, you could like, okay, 2023 was a fluke. Every other year, he's been better than he was in 2023. 2024 is like, nah, this is him. He's fallen off the table. And today is a microcosm of how bad he has gone. And Vinny pointed out, like, you don't need to throw the ball. You know you have a weak left field arm, firstly. Throw the ball to the cutoff man. And Vinny, I think you pointed out when we were talking, like, if he just throws the ball to the cutoff man 100 out of 100 times, does anybody complain about Andrew Benintendi? His defense, no. They're like, hey, man, at least he's playing right. He's trying things. And the bunt, I think he was trying to get on. I like the effort. The execution was shit. Like, it was terrible. It was a pop-up bunt. And so the guy at second can't even go anywhere because it's a pop-up bunt. And so there is so many things going wrong with him, both in execution, effort, baseball IQ. It's all bad for Andrew Benintendi. I don't know if he needs a week off, a day off, something, because he keeps on playing. He's got a negative war, negative one war already in 21 games. That's hard to do. He's worse than Martin Maldonado, who's got two hits this year. That's bad. Two.
Not good. We figured out, though, we did the math. He needs like 5,000 at-bats before he gets to a 0-0.
I think it's 40. I think he has to go. I think he has to go. Maldonado has to go 2 for 4,400 to bat actual 3-0s. So I don't see that happening.
But if it's 2 for 500 at-bats, you know, that's .003. So that's going to be still impressive for Martin and Maldonado.
If I'm him, if it were me who was struggling so poorly, I'd say, what do I need to do to have my final batting average be 007? Yeah. That would be awesome.
Start calling Martin Maldonado James Bond. Yeah, I mean, the Benintendi stuff, I hate to say I told you so.
Hey, man.
I said it day one.
Guess what? If you did something, you said something before, and if Andrew Benintendi was out here crushing, I'll be crushing you every single day, Sean. So take your victory laps.
The biggest thing that you guys said on that podcast was just that he's not expected to be the star, right? He's supposed to show up every single day and play. And he's done that. I mean, unfortunately, he's shown up every single day and put on his cleats and has played left field horrifically. And we've had to watch him every single day. But he's been healthy, and that's the thing that I brought up. Like, not a lot of people, I think it was 30 players since 2017 when he, you know, started actually playing as a true pro player, had played more than 700 games, right? He was just a guy that you could put in the lineup every single day. But now you got their three best hitters out, and there is just a spotlight on Andrew Benintendi because he is the biggest free agent in franchise, biggest contract in franchise history. There's just a huge spotlight on him, and just the declining skills are just even more apparent when he is supposed to be the guy.
It's very much like what I said about the team at the top of the show, which is, hey, they were maybe not expected to win a lot of games, but they were expected to play a certain way, right? And I think with Benintendi, probably even that day, though he was coming off of a much better season than he is now after, you know, in his second year with the White Sox, the idea was he is not expected to, then it was, hit a lot of home runs or, like you said, be the best player on the team, right? When they signed him last year, they had Robert, Moncada, Jimenez, Anderson, and Vaughn, right? Worst case scenario, probably he was expected to be the sixth best player on the team. But some of those guys are gone. Some of those guys are hurt. Some of those guys aren't producing. But on top of it, he's not even doing enough to be that, right? He is not reliable right now. I think the idea was they gave him all this money, fine, whatever. But guess what? They're going to get a guy where they know what they're going to get. Now, the know what you're going to get is bottom of the barrel stuff from what he's done through a year and 21 games. I think Pedro is right to say it will get better for Andrew Benintendi. It cannot, because it cannot continue to be this bad. But are they going to get even the you know, run of the mill, okay, this is a guy who goes out and does XYZ and that's what we know we're going to get from him? Are they even going to get that ever? That is now the question, because here is healthy Andrew Benintendi off to this kind of start. So I think last year they could chalk it up to an injury. They could chalk it up to the way things went for the entire team. Right now, what do you chalk it up to? He's just not playing well, and he's not playing well in the way that he can control. Even if you can't control your batting average or your on-base percentage, you can control your ability to just make routine plays in the field, to throw the ball back to the cutoff man, and he's not doing that.
Well, and I think one thing, too, we heard his offseason where he was eating pork, he was proteining up and adding 20 pounds. Like, that's probably not best for that type of player. Adding 20 pounds is not going to turn you into a 10-home-run hitter, right? Like, the biggest thing that he probably needs to focus on is flexibility, speed, and making sure that his contact ability stays up. And we just see that he's, you know, still fairly not great at making contact, not great at making contact that avoids defenders. Like, that's the biggest thing. He's always making weak contact. And I understand, you know, maybe trying to pick up the average exit velocity just so, you know, balls go faster. Maybe it reaches the ground a little bit more. But, like, he doesn't have a good, you know, hold of the strike zone either. Like, he's just truly, like, added 20 pounds and has just seemed to hurt every single aspect of his game.
This guy was supposed to walk a bunch too, right?
Yes,
guy was supposed to walk a bunch.
His walk rate is low this year.
And Herb, what did we say the last 2 years about Tim Anderson, right? Just put that ball in right field every single time, get a hit every single time, you're on base for your team.
Yes.
Andrew Benintendi, pull it. Go the other way with it. I don't care, but, like, it could be, you can just get a soft base hit every time. Your on base percentage is .350 and you're helping this team out, right?
Yeah.
You would think, but that's what it is. That's what goes back to trying to do too much, because if a player, a competitive player, is going to try to do extra bases every time rather than just take what's given to them.
Yeah, it's just so frustrating because we know, as somebody points out, there's 3.5 more years of this. And so there's no getting out of this until year 4, maybe. And that guy might just be this now. Now, he probably is not going to be at this level, but I can't see regular Andrew Benintendi, Boston Andrew Benintendi, returning, because I think his confidence is shot. And today is example of everything that he's been going through this year and last, and being on a bad team is probably not helping him out. I wish there was a way that he can go to a different team. I wish the White Sox fans could do for him what the Philly fans did for Trey Turner, but I know it's a different thing, and it's a total won't be a capacity crowd at the stadium either, but he needs a shot of positivity in his life wherever he needs to find it. If he needs to trick himself and think that he's a 300 hitter and that he's the best, fake it until you make it, because whatever you're doing right now is not working.
Next home game, that woman in the Andrew Benintendi jersey is going to give him a standing ovation, and John Triffin's going to be like, wow, Andrew Benintendi fans have come out huge for support Herb Lawrence with the idea. Anyways.
Something. Bad. I mean, it's he's on the team for this year, next year, and the year after. So we might as well just go all out and just give him all the positivity needed, because no one wants him to be this.
Yeah, but who,
no one wants him to be this.
Who wouldn't want to be 22? You know, I mean, like, that's what you're saying. Like, Andrew Benintendi wants to be 22 again. I mean, that sounds like anyone over the age of 40.
Yeah, but, like, what is booing him going to do for him? What is railing? We have a job to do to tell you what's going on. But as a fan at the game, let's try to turn the tables on what we would usually do, especially on a 3-18 team when they come back home on that Tampa series. Yeah, they suck, but these guys are trying. I'm sure Andrew doesn't want to be as bad as he's been, even though the airs were dumb today. Let's try to get some positivity to him while we're at the stadium and try to lift them up and see if that works. If it doesn't, F it.
I feel
who cares?
Like at this point, though, most people that are showing up to the game don't want to be bothered by White Sox baseball. It's more, hey, let's just go to the game, have some hot dogs.
It's fun.
Have some
fun. That's okay. What's wrong with that?
No, I'm just saying, though, like you're not going to go, like in 2021, you're not going to go see the AL Central leading White Sox who are leading the AL in July or whatever, right? You're going to, you know, enjoy a brat. And that's about it.
Right.
I don't even think you're booing or cheering Andrew Benintendi. It's just a malaise.
I agree with Brooks Boyer. It is better at the ballpark because watching at home is terrible.
Do you want to break so Greg Braggs doesn't break your nose?
All right. Is it game time right now?
I threaten with my breaks.
Game time. Game Time is now an authorized ticket marketplace of Major League Baseball, which means getting tickets is even easier and faster. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to first pitch. With killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, and their lowest price guarantee, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets. I just went to Game Time to buy the tickets I'm going to go to this Friday in Milwaukee, the good land, to see the New York Yankees take on the Brewers. Bought a zone deal. It was so easy. It was $120-something usually in that section. I got them for $88 because you pick the section, Game Time picks the seats that you get to sit at. And you guys already know my Atlanta story where I went down there, got some seats, went to a secondary marketplace, and found one of those places had a lower ticket price in the row and section that I was sitting in. And so I sent this information to Game Time, got a 110% of my difference in my account within 12 minutes. You can save up to 60% buying last-minute tickets for sports, concerts, comedy, theater, and more. And save even more with exclusive in-app deals on select seats ahead of the game for every event. And like I told you with zone deals, save even more when you choose a section and let Game Time choose the seats. And if you've ever been to Wrigley, you know that panoramic view of your seats in-app are very clutch because you don't need to sit behind an obstructive view in Wrigley or any other old ballpark like Fenway Park. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. And for a limited time, well, this is a I got the wrong read. It was the one where you get $20 off. I don't think that's still fresh.
Okay. Well, use code CHGO.
That one.
There you go. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code CHGO for $20 off your first purchase. That one still works. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code CHGO. For $20 off, download Game Time today. Last-minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
Thanks for assist, kid.
No
problem. Herb took that one 8 innings, and then they called in Sean for the close.
Hey, there you go. Michael Kopech to throw 101.
He's whoever that guy came in the next. The Junior. Junior Marte.
It wasn't Sir Anthony Dominguez?
No.
Oh, okay.
Junior with a Y.
I just honestly. They have crazy bullpen names. Sir Anthony Dominguez, also Orion Keck. Kirkering. That one's crazy. Drive home a winner this April after visiting our partner, Ray Chevrolet. They're sharing their best offers of the year. Make your way to Ray Chevrolet on Route 12 in Fox Lake to join in on the savings. As one of the top-selling Chevy dealers in the Midwest, you'll always be able to shop one of Chicagoland's largest inventories. Plus, you can find the perfect tailgating vehicles to celebrate Caleb Williams. For a limited time, they're offering 0% financing for 72 months on new Silverados with over 100 available. And to top it all off, they're pricing over 125 vehicles under $20,000. Seriously, can pricing get more affordable?
No.
I don't think so.
Well, I can. Get a free oil change at Ray Chevrolet in Fox Lake when you mention CHGO. A free oil change. All you need to do is mention CHGO when scheduling your oil change. Start off the new year right and schedule it by April 30th. Visit Ray Chevrolet in Fox Lake or RayChevrolet.com. They've been serving the community since 1963. Find new roads.
Our guy Stephen Nicholas is watching right now. Saying we're having a two-day draft party at Joe's on Weed Street. Thursday is sold out, but we have tickets available for Friday. We'll also be having live YouTube for all 3 days of the draft. Look at our guy, Stephen Nicholas. And guess who will be there?
Hi, Stephen.
Greg Braggs.
Caleb Williams.
He won't be there.
Are you in the promotional shot right there?
Yeah. I'm like, okay. Right there.
Look at you. And my guys.
Looking at live. Looking at live in NFL draft.
The guy beneath me is Ray, and he's a barber, and he's a huge White Sox fan.
I love
fan.
Ray the barber. Ray.
Really good dude.
Yeah. Shout out Ray. All right. Let's chat a little bit about Braden Shumake. So John Triffin brought up that he was...
Speaking of barbering.
Oh, yes. Braden Shumake caught up with John Triffin, and John Triffin said, hey, you know, you got a new facial style. And Braden's like, yeah, I did this to change up the vibe. Last time I did this was in 2019 at Texas A&M. He had 10 hits in 5 games. 2 of them were home runs. So he's trying to change up the vibe. He's done that in the past 2 games. Greg, can we see that graphic? The White Sox record since Braden Shumake has shaved his goatee. It's 0-2.
All right. To be fair, vibe has been changed. Outside of Aloy, who homered, obviously, if you were to hand out a White Sox player of the game for today, it might be Braden Shumake for some of the very nice defensive plays that he made.
You're not wrong.
I mean, it's not exactly, you know, the highest bar to clear with the performances that they've been turning in, but he made some very, very nice defensive plays today.
Yeah, over the shoulder, going back to the infield and catching it, stabbing it. I mean, that is probably going to be the highlight defensively for the White Sox of the year. It's not a slight on the White Sox. It's just a great catch. And then he made 2 sparkling plays also at third base. Like, he was gloving it. I gave him some shit because he made 3 errors at shortstop earlier in the year, but there's nothing wrong with his glove. He looked like Michael Jack Schmidt out there.
Well, and easier to move around with the lighter weight face.
Well, that's true. Oh, yes. Yeah, there you go. Aerodynamic. Yeah. It's just like seam-shifted wake. Now, with Braden Shumake and this crazy glove, what are we going to do with Danny Mendick's crazy hot bat in Charlotte? He's got 8 home runs. I believe Fred shared that the White Sox is a team of 10.
So 5 days in a row he's homered, right? Or 5 games in a row,
it
yeah.
might be 6 at this point. I think he's literally just on fire.
He homered again today?
He might have. I honestly think Danny – it was 5 straight.
Yeah.
I would believe with how hot he is right now, it's 6 straight. Do they call up Danny Mendick?
I would call him up, but
you
want to
see more Lenin Sosa?
Is Danny Mendick on the 40 man? That's the thing.
No.
Yeah, so that's going to be the thing where you have trouble with bringing him up and then taking somebody off the 40 man. They already got to do that with Mike Clevinger, and they still haven't done that. So
that is not true.
Is he on the 40 man?
On the 40 man, I believe. Clevinger?
I thought
Clevinger's on the 40 man.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Then
He's a major leaguer. Fam wasn't because it was a minor league deal.
Correct.
They signed Clevinger to a major league
deal. Yes, Fam will have to be put on the 40
man. So you already have to do that then.
But that's Pilar likely.
Or, yeah.
Yeah.
Or Grossman.
But who are you going to do that for Danny? I say he deserves to because he's proven that he can hit the ball down in AAA and probably be a better option than what Lenin Sosa is. But Lenin Sosa's 24. I think Danny Mendick's 30 or 31. So I can see them like, this guy has no future with us, even though he's crushing the ball. That's Charlotte. And also, if he comes up here, we got to release somebody or put somebody on an extended 60-day IL, which do we want to do that for Danny Mendick, really?
But everything you said is correct, but I will say this. Like, they already sent Popeye Rodriguez away.
They did.
Is Lenin Sosa that much greater of a future with this team? I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I've been talking about this whole time. Why bring in Clevinger? Why bring in Pham? Give the at-bats to people who could be part of the future. Has Lenin Sosa shown answered that question of whether he is or not, right? Because really all we're seeing from him every day is a lot of tough play. And so I'm curious if they were so willing to already make that decision on Jose Rodriguez. Are they ready to make that decision on Lenin Sosa?
I don't know. I get your point for sure, but also, I mean, they're 3-18, and I think maybe at this point they just want to win some games, and maybe Danny Mendick helps them win more games. Like,
it's why Tommy Pham's here, right?
Yeah.
Or going to be here, right?
Right.
Yeah.
At least by the 25th. He's got 4 more days, right, until he has to make that decision?
I think he played on this weekend in Charlotte, so he's, I mean, I'm sure he doesn't need that much to warm up and play baseball. I would assume he would be in Minnesota either the beginning or the end of the series.
Who's this?
Pham? Tommy Pham.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's 4-game series in Minnesota. Yeah. I could see that after. I mean, that or he's going to be released.
At the latest.
Yeah.
The 25th is on, I think, Thursday. So they have to make a decision anyways, and I would assume that he would be all right in Charlotte enough for him to be coming up here to the majors.
Let's chat a little bit about the pitchers. We have Nick Nastrini, who pitched today. He had 70 pitches through 3 innings, and then he was out by the 4th. What did we make of Nastrini? Greg's flashing today. 3 innings pitch, 5 runs, 6 hits, 3 Ks, 5 walks for Nastrini. And Aaron Nola breezed through the White Sox. 8 innings, 2 earned runs, 4 hits, 7 Ks, 1 walk for Nola. But Nastrini obviously wasn't as good as his debut, but there's experience gained, right?
Absolutely.
That's the best way to say happened today.
I mean, here's the thing. I mean, I know we as a show and as a company were not around for the darkest days of the last rebuilding effort, right? But I was. Oh, boy. and I remember what Rick Renneria used to always say about Lucas Giolito, and then what Lucas Giolito ended up saying about the White Sox after things started going well for him, which was they gave him the chance to go out there and fail. And that taught him so much about how to get through a game in the major leagues. And while Nick Nastrini looked very good in his first impressions aren't necessarily everything. And you've got to have games like today in order to develop as a pitcher. And heck, for the longest time, there were a couple innings there where he got out of jams. There were a couple innings there where he figured out how to keep it to a small number. It didn't end up that way. But guess what? There's going to be days like this even Greg Maddux had days like this, right? And I'm not saying Nick Nastrini is going to end up as a Hall of Famer, but if he's going to end up being a part of the future for this White Sox team, he's going to have the confidence to go out and get through a lineup like the Phillies trot out there, which is one of the better ones in baseball. He didn't do it very well today. The pitching wasn't, he seemed kind of all over the place in terms of the location and what Maldonado was calling for from him for a good chunk of his outing. And he threw a lot of pitches and he was out of there quick. But guess what? I bet he learned a lot today, maybe even more today than he learned in the first start, which went so much better.
Yeah, and I think that, the first inning and the fourth inning, those were his trouble spots. And tell me what team is going to not have trouble with Kyle Schwarber leading off a game. And then you go to Trey Turner, who today got his extra base streak broken up. I think he had 7 games in a row where he had an extra base hit. Still got a hit. Still great. Then it's Bryce Harper. Like, it keeps on going. JT Realmuto. It's a test for the kid, and it was a test that he ultimately failed. But going through this trials and tribulations, going through this toughness, and I'm glad that Pedro let him go as far as he did, and he saw in the fourth inning, that's it. He's giving up too many hits, too many runs, too many walks. Let's get the kid out there with some type of positivity, and then I think his runs actually scored after he left the game too. So it's a good lesson for him to learn that, hey, yes, that first start versus the Royals was good. It was pretty good for a leading off your MLB career. But teams like the Phillies exist. Now you got to figure out how to throw a strike to Kyle Schwarber without him hitting it over the fence. Same thing with the rest of the guys there. And he struggled. He couldn't find the plate in the first batter he faced. And I think he was thinking, like, this is Kyle Schwarber. He's going to take me deep anyways. And it's a tough at-bat to start your Philadelphia or your road career in the major leagues. But it's good that you had it. So the next time you pitch will be Friday seemingly, versus the Tampa Bay Rays. A little less hard team, a team that doesn't hit the ball as much, and you're back at home. So you can learn from what you did in the Phillies game and apply it to the Rays game next time you're out there, and you become better. And that's good. Give these innings to these young pitchers instead of the Sorokas and the Felixons, who actually pitched well in relief on Friday, of the world, so you can see, hey, can this kid handle what's going on? If he can't, we have the tools to fix it, or we need to look for another pitcher to go to, because this year's loss might as well have people like Nastrini go out and do his thing. And I'm looking forward to the second start by Jonathan Cannon, which I don't know if it's been announced, but I assume
it has been. He'll pitch this. He'll tomorrow, pitch against the Twins.
Yeah. He'll pitch for the Twins. I'll see the same thing. Now, it's not as tough as the Phillies, but still, we've all seen games versus Target Field and the White Sox versus the Twins. Avoid Byron Buxton. That Julian's going to hit us some doubles. Going to be annoying. And luckily, you don't have to face Royce Lewis.
Thankfully, Nelson Cruz is no longer on the team.
Oh,
you
God.
Know, imagine if they had to face Nelson Cruz. All right. I want to go to Garrett Crochet. He pitched Friday. I'm a little bit worried about Mr. Crochet. I know I called him Randy Johnson, and maybe that was a little bit too early on my half after opening day. But I was excited. Hey, sue man. Me.
He was good.
He was good. He yeah. was great. Great. Those first four starts.
Yeah.
As good as, if not better than, Chris Sale. All right? But he's run into some issues against Cincinnati, and definitely ran into some issues against the Phillies. He threw 41 four-seam fastballs, and the biggest thing that's jumping out to me about the 41 four-seam fastballs and the 21 cutters is the mile-per-hour dip on those 41 fastballs. He was down 0.6 miles per hour on his yearly average. Yearly average was 96.3. He was sitting 95.7. Started out the game sitting around 95, 97, and near the end of the game, 92, 95, and the 21 cutters averaged in that game 89.8, the yearly average 90.8, so that's down about 1 mile per hour. The slider, the 13 that he threw, were around normal yearly averages, so nothing too big to take away from that. But with that dip in velocity, we saw less ability to command as well. He wasn't able to get those called strikes that we saw. He, especially in the first four games, saw a lot of backdoor cutters that would be called strikes to righties, a lot of forcing fastballs that he was able to locate inside. He wasn't able to get that. Only 20% called strike plus whiff rate, 16 called strikes and whiffs on 75 pitches, and his called strike plus whiffs by start, 28, 34, 28, and 30, and then 16. So a huge drop off there. The average in those games, 34% called strike plus whiff rate, dominant, 21 in this game. So just the stuff wasn't as effective, and I think we're kind of seeing a little bit of a roadblock here for Garrett Crochet. We still see Cannon in the rotation. Is this a time to get Crochet some rest soon? I don't think it's been announced because it's Cannon, Fetty, Crochet, and Soroka for Minnesota, but is there any point here where we see Crochet get some time off?
I mean, I think some time off is going to mean, maximum a skipped start. You know, maybe something like more realistic would be now he's got 5 days of rest or now he's got 6 days of rest between starts kind of thing. But I think that is the way that they're, at least the most likely way that they employ a strategy as they go along. It's not going to be shut them down for X days. It's going to be just stretch things out a little bit and maybe get them a little bit more rest. I don't know if that necessarily has to do with what we saw on Friday, though. You know what I mean? That is going probably something that was going to have to happen and that the White Sox had in mind for over the course of the season, just because came in with 73 relief innings on his tab, and that was just about it. Nothing as a starter. So as he's learning to do this job, as he's learning to get way more innings under his belt in a single season, yeah, there's going to be times when they maybe need to give him breathers, but I don't think there's going to be a shutdown or anything like that for any significant amount of time. We have seen in the past when Michael Kopech was treated similarly, right? Getting some extended time between starts and maybe having a start skipped. But even that was rare. So I think it will be small moves like that to try to space him out and spread him out over the course of the season. Not necessarily Garrett's going to take the next month off because we want him to have fewer innings. I don't think we're going to see something like that unless, knock on wood, there's an injury.
Yeah, we saw AJ Puck, who pitched for the Marlins, I think on Friday, went down with a shoulder impingement. He was kind of, you know, he's doing the same type of thing that Garrett Crochet is, a reliever into a starter. And so as long as it's not that, as Vinny just pointed out, I'm good with him getting as, like, you know, if Fetty or if Soroka pitches in front of him and he gets the Thursday start instead of the Wednesday start that's scheduled right now, that'll be great. But we saw today's ball game what rest does for a pitcher. We last saw Michael Kopech throwing 95 down the middle to Salvador Perez, and that's 95. Today, 100. He's back with 4 days rest. Arm rejuvenated. Didn't really need him these last 3 days because they were getting house, but it was good for Pedro to get him in there, not let him rust on the bench. But we saw that arm back to what it was because he had pitched last week, I think, on the 15th and the 17th. And so that 17th start, you saw the MPH is down a little bit. It could have been doing with the weather, too. It's kind of a damper day in Chicago. But today, 101. And maybe a skip start or two would be good for Garrett Crochet to regain some of that fastball. And like we've always talked about, this is his first time doing this. So you have to treat him like a unicorn, not as a guy that is part of a five-man rotation. You have to kind of cater to him and what he's doing and how he's feeling and then see the results and say, all right, that's not premium stuff. That's not his best stuff. How can we get his best stuff out of him every time he goes out there? If it means having a six-man rotation with Michael Clevinger gets here, so be it. Do it. Because you last thing you want is this guy to either get a dead arm period or have an injury right there so you won't have him for the 2025 season. So they have to treat him a little bit more with kid gloves than they have to do with all the rest of the guys in the rotation.
I'm a little bit nervous, but we'll see how, you know, they're able to handle it. I think this is a very important, if not their most important, developmental piece. I think it's very interesting to see how this will get developed and how they will try to let this player grow. Colson Montgomery is interesting, but, you know, I think it's a hitter. You know, it seems like he's doing pretty well so far. I think it's mostly on the hitter to excel at the major league level. I think this is probably the most interesting developmental case that they have. So we'll see how they are, you know, going day by day with it.
And we're talking about this historically bad season the White Sox have started off with. They need some wins, not actually in the left column, but wins of, hey, we developed him. Hey, we developed him. And they could see, yeah, 2024 was a wasteland. It sucked. But that was the year that we started Garrett Crochet. And then looking years back, it's like that year might have sucked, but Garrett Crochet became our crown jewel of actual development. And so all the rest of the pitchers can see that. All the rest of the teams can feel good about the White Sox can develop pitching at least. Turn a guy who was a reliever into a starter and pretty much a good starter his first four starts and ran into the Phillies. The Phillies are going to do this to a lot of teams.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, and two, you look at the game against Cincinnati, it was a little bit rough in the second inning.
That's it.
And if he gets the called strike on India and it's not a walk, maybe he doesn't run into that same issues. But again, just from the pitching standpoint, the stuff is worsening, right? He isn't the same guy from Detroit when he had an offseason and the buildup, right? He wasn't the fresh arm out of spring training. He's now made six starts, and it does seem like the stuff and the arm is at least deadening a little bit. All right. Phil, what are you talking about? The Phillies have been to World Series and the National League Championship Series back-to-back years. The lineup is murder. Don't base any decisions based on three-game series in Philadelphia. No. They're 3-18, Phil. They've been swept in four of the seven series. Phil, what are you talking about?
I mean, he's not wrong.
Phil, if
the Phillies are good.
Yes, but every team looks this good against the White Sox. It's been an ass-kicking for 18 games.
Oh, yeah, we're not basing this on them getting swept by the Phillies. We're basing this on them playing poorly. Sans the Phillies everywhere. Have we had a game where it's like, all right, fine?
No. I mean, again, like that win against the Royals, that last win against the Royals, the 2-1 victory where Gavin Sheets hits the solo home run, is huge because by April 15th or something like that, the Royals could have wrapped up the season series against the White Sox by winning seven games already. I mean, no. Thank you, Phil, for the comment.
Did you see, and this is just an aside, did you see yesterday, and the White Sox have avoided Cole Reagans this whole year. Baltimore Orioles went to get them yesterday and like, well, this is nothing. Crack, 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 crack. Seven runs, Cole Reagans.
Did you see their?
And the Royals came back.
The Orioles are pretty good.
Yeah, they're really good, too. And we got, like, six games for them still left on the schedule. God damn it.
Seven and eight hitters would be the White Sox 1 and 2 hitters at this point. Colton Cowser is like got like a 1350 slugging.
I'll take Jordan Westberg right now.
It's insane.
Please give me Jordan Westberg.
All right, let's wrap this up.
Let's get it up over 50 likes, chat. Right.
I think we have like 130 people watching and only 34 likes, 36 likes. So hit that thumbs up button. Do we have a favorite 36 in White Sox history?
Kevan Smith.
Kevan Smith. Okay. I guess the only thing that I have left in my notes that I didn't get to is just this comment from Jerry, and I'm sorry, Vinny, to bring it up, but at the location we're at now, we can't generate the revenue needed to pay those salaries of players. And I just think that there was a really good comment left in my Twitter replies that made me think of that, and maybe this was a ploy. Maybe they knew Andrew Benintendi was going to be cheeks, to put it lightly, and maybe this was, you know, Jerry Reinsdorf's way of saying, see what happens when we sign free agents? This is what you want? I mean, I was thinking
that.
And you know, that way, you sign Andrew Benintendi, you say, hey, we spent the money, no one shows up because Andrew Benintendi's so bad, you get $1 billion for a new stadium because Andrew Benintendi's so bad. Is there anything there?
Nope.
Okay. That's Vinny Duber. You can follow him at Vinny Duber. He's our CHGO White Sox beat writer. That's Herb Lawrence. You can follow him at Eckerall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. I'm Sean Anderson. You can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. Thank you to Greg Braggs Jr. for producing the show. Thank you to Phil for that comment about the Phillies. And thank you to everyone watching. We'll see you tomorrow for a pre- and post-game for the start of the Minnesota Twins series. Goodbye.